I want to say a massive thank you to Nightmare Files for featuring in this video. He has a great narration voice and a really good channel, so make sure you go and check him out. He's going to be uploading my part of the collab in the near future, so make sure you stay posted for that. I hope you're all having a great day. Sorry if my voice is different in this at all, I have quite a bad throat again, but I'm recovering. Let me know who else you'd like to see me work with soon. Hope you are having a great day and enjoy these stories.
This happened about 6 years ago in the early hours of my 20th birthday. At the time, I had been working as a carpet cleaner. It's also important to note that I am a 6 foot male, and at the time, weighed about 210 pounds. By nature, I'm an extremely cautious individual. Also, in the particular area that I worked in, there was a lot of gang activity at the time. It was about 6 p.m. when I got a call from one of the head carpet cleaning techs. He explained that he couldn't do the late job he was scheduled for, which was at 11 p.m., because his pregnant wife might have been going into labor, and he had to get to the hospital. Seeing as I was broke, I told him I would cover for him. It wasn't until around 2 a.m. that me and my partner got finished with the job. We made it back to our shop at around 2:15 a.m., got the truck ready for the other guys who would be taking it out in a few hours, and headed home around 2:45 a.m. I worked for nearly 20 hours straight at this point and had a 45-minute drive home. I lived out in the middle of nowhere. Being exhausted and barely able to keep my eyes open, I decided to stop at a gas station and grab an energy drink. When I pulled in, I noticed a black Buick sitting in the far corner of the gas station parking lot. I didn't think much of it. Perhaps it was the attendant's car. I went in, got my drink, and left. After about 5 minutes of being back on the road, I had a gut feeling that something was wrong and began to check behind me to see if someone was telling me. I saw a pair of headlights in the distance gaining on me fast. Deciding that I needed to confirm my suspicion before taking any drastic measures, I continued my drive home while keeping an eye on the headlights in the rearview mirror. I was about 2 miles from home and still being tailed by the headlights. That's when I decided to take a detour. After about 10 minutes of maneuvering on back roads, I knew that things were getting serious as the headlights followed me every which way. My little four-cylinder Saturn was slow to get away. Now fearing for my life, I knew I had to try to take control of the situation, as well as keep from leading my pursuers to my home, where my sister and her 2-month-old son were staying at the time. At the next stop sign, I put my car in park, placed my 12-inch military-grade knife up my jacket sleeve, and grabbed the pistol I keep in my car for protection. I prayed I would not have to use them, and then stepped out of the car. As I did, the car that had been following me came to a screeching halt, and 4 men exited the vehicle. It was then that I recognized it was the same black Buick from the gas station. As the men climbed out, the moonlight revealed that one of them was carrying a large chain, and the others were armed with a baseball bat, a tire iron, and the one who I assumed was their leader had an axe. Seeing this, and making sure to keep my pistol out of the light, I asked, "Is there a problem?" One of the men responded,
"You about to die, boy."
It was at this moment that I realized this was some kind of gang initiation. I dropped the knife from my sleeve, gripping it in my left hand, while backing behind my open car door, trying to at least limit the direction they could attack me from. Seeing the knife and my attempt to put something between me and them, they laughed. And one said to the others,
"This motherfucker think he's gonna beat us with a little knife."
As they approached, I pulled the gun out and fired a warning shot at the leader's feet. The hardcore badasses quickly turned into little scared rabbits and were now hightailing it out of there. I yelled after them, "You idiots picked the wrong guy to mess with. Now get the hell out of here before I put a bullet in your ass." They all fumbled back into the car and hauled ass. As they sped away, I was able to get the plate number and called the police. After getting off the phone with the dispatcher, I got back into my car. I made it home around 4 a.m. and passed out. When I woke up a few hours later, I called the police station to see if they had any leads. It turns out that the car was stolen, and they were unable to locate it. As far as I know, the car has never been found, and the four hoodlums were never caught.
This is going to be a simple-ish one, but this is something that's happened over the last couple of weeks. Now, I attend church that has a service every Sunday evening. Afterwards, I'll typically go out with friends or get late-night pancakes with a group of young adults from the church. This was on the 27th, and it was a pancakes night. No drinking, just clean fun. My friend drove me home, and I arrived in my apartment where I live alone. It's about 12:30 a.m. About my apartment complex, it's one of those outdoor ones with outdoors hallways from which everyone's doors are accessible. I'm a very organized person, and going home at night, I'm especially vigilant. I carry a strong brand of pepper spray with me and always hurry to my door. Now, this is important. My door has two deadbolts when I get in. Locking them's like clockwork. Deadbolt 1, 2, shoes off. Keys in the tray. I wash my face, check the deadbolts, and sleep. Now, I wake up at around 5 a.m. to grab water. I walk into my living room and kitchen, and as I pass the front door, I see that the deadbolts are horizontal, completely unlatched from the inside of my apartment. Now, this messes with me to no bounds because I latched both of them and double-checked them. Needless to say, I was creeped out enough that I don't get back to sleep. After I made some coffee, I realized one thing. I hadn't ventured to my walk-in closet for the entire day, or when I got home because most of my clothes are in my drawer. I washed my face and went to sleep. The closet has sliding doors, and they were shut the whole time. I think we all know what my suggestion is. I call my parents that morning and tell them everything, and they immediately arrange for my lock to be changed. The locksmith even said, "It's a good idea you called me, because it sounds like the beginning of a Dateline episode." I see this stuff a lot. Intruders hiding in apartments, accessing them. He told me he'd recently installed some kind of steel paneling for an actress who had a stalker. Because this incident was so bizarre, it took me a while to connect it to some other things that happened in my apartment. I remember I come in one afternoon back in April and found an old sports watch of mine that had previously been lost, and it was set with the correct time lying on my dresser. For the first time ever, I found myself wishing this weirdness could be attributed to paranormal causes. The thing that scares me is, this could easily be a sexual predator, or maybe even a murderer. While I type this, I have no idea if they're actually still in my apartment or not. I just hope that they've left, and my thorough searches were thorough enough.
We had already been in Afghanistan for 2 weeks at this point, and our FOB had been attacked at least 6 times already. If you don't know what a FOB is, it's a forward operating base. It was a very small blackout FOB, and we call it blackout because at night, we couldn't have any lights on outside due to indirect fire or sniper fire. Anyways, a week goes by and nothing happens. So our company is being told that we're doing a mission together, a company mission. Usually we had gone on missions at the platoon level, which is one level under company. By this time of deployment, we had been on a few key leader engagements, and nothing much happened. The only contact we received was at the FOB. But a lot of us had a bad feeling about this one. To make a long story short, then we ended up going on mission. and we moved on foot about 2 kilometers to the east at around 1 a.m. and we set up our patrol base at around 3 a.m. and then sent out each platoon to their own sector. Each platoon moved a few kilometers away while headquarters stayed at our patrol base. I'm on the radio talking with our forward observers from each platoon, and they're reporting up that they can hear the enemy, but they can't see them. At this point, it's still dark, and we are basically in the backyard of the enemy, and this area is known for the Taliban. These guys are freaking out on the radio, as they keep saying the Taliban is out there, but we can't see them. Then at our patrol base, some local man walks up, and our interpreter ends up talking to him. As he's speaking to the interpreter is telling us everything he's saying. At this point, I'm holding my weapon pointed down to the ground, and I slip my finger to the trigger. And I look at the interpreter, with him not knowing that I understand everything he's saying. I tell him, "That's not what he's saying," while looking him straight in the eyes. My commander looked at me and said, "What?" I repeated, "That's not what he's saying. The interpreter is lying." The interpreter was telling us that this guy wanted food and water. What he was really saying is that there's Taliban all around us, and they outnumber us, and they knew about everything we were doing before we even came out here, and that they're going to attack us and our FOB. At this point, the interpreter looks at me with wide eyes and starts to run toward his bag. As the interpreter is running toward his bag, he screams, "Allah Akbar." When he reached in his bag, he grabbed a detonator, and he squeezed it, and then, boom. He had a bomb in the middle of our patrol base, but it only injured a few of us. He was immediately shot, and all hell broke loose. Shots are coming from everywhere, but we can't pinpoint where. Immediately, 7 people were shot. I got down next to my commander, and I'm on my radio talking to my forward observers, who are trying to call in artillery and mortars. I'm trying to aim my weapon, but can't tell who is who because it's so dark. We have on night vision, but they suck. Guys are screaming that they are hit, and some guys are cowering behind boulders. Then over the radio I hear, I'm not going to use his real name, Sergeant Smith is down. Luckily at this point the sun is starting to come up, and a few of us run over to where Sergeant Smith was, and I saw him. I saw Sergeant Smith, face down and not moving. The medic and I grab and drag him. My buddy was right next to him, and he saw Sergeant Smith's face when we turned him over, and he started crying and freaking out because his face looked like he was screaming, but it was just stuck there. I stopped for a second when I saw his face, but I snapped right out of it. This wasn't my first deployment. This wasn't my first dead body. Sergeant Smith was one of those guys that was really untouchable, an alpha male, very in shape and had everything going for him. When the guys saw that he was killed, they definitely thought that they were next because he was like a super soldier to these guys. I asked my buddy, "Where did he see the enemy? Where's the Taliban?" And he pointed and said, 10 meters that way. I thought to myself, 10 meters? That means that they're inside our patrol base now. I pause and I look around. I never seen so many self-proclaimed tough guys turn into little girls so quick, and so many guys that didn't believe in God start praying for God. I will not go into everything else because it's pretty hard for me. Just know that some of us had to fight with our hands because the enemy was so close to us. We only lost 1 guy that day, but we had 18 people wounded. 13 of those people were shot, but everyone was mentally wounded. And still are. We all thought that we were untouchable because we jumped out of planes, knew how to fight, and lifted weights. Everyone is a tough guy until they have to do tough guy shit.
This event took place not too long ago. It happened on a Wednesday night when me and my best friend decided to go clubbing. Neither of us are actually club people, but it was free for ladies, and a local rock band was performing. They're pretty famous around here, so we figured why not. It's been a while since we got out on a night out anyway. Nothing particularly interesting happened at the club, and it was heavily overpopulated. When the show was over, we decided to leave, as it was getting even more populated with new people coming in. It was hard to even keep up a conversation because we literally had to scream over each other, and in the worst cases, even push to get past the mass. We walked around the old town and chit-chatted a bit. The old town was fairly quiet, except for the ambulance trying to aid a drunk guy who hit his head on the pavement. After a while, we both decided to go home. I had to get a taxi because it's quite a long 1 hour trip, and there's no way I was going to walk this path alone as it tends to get quite dangerous at night. She lived close to the city centre and in another direction, so she decided to walk home instead. After I'd ordered my taxi and parted ways, I had to wait 10 minutes at least, so I decided to sit down on a bench near the bus stop. That's where it began. I was scanning the area, and when I glanced over to the bus stop on the other side of the road, I noticed a dark greyish SUV parked right next to it. Right as I looked towards it, he started waving for me to come closer. I was confused and looked around again to see if there was any more people around. When I glanced again, he was trying to pull the same gesture, but I didn't respond. That's when he slowly started to drive. A bad gut feeling instantly kicked in, and then he pulled up right next to me as I feared. He rolled his windows down and yelled, "I'm Ricardo!" I'm not even sure if that was his real name. The guy seemed to be way older than me, almost twice my age. He appeared to be in his late 30s or early 40s, and seemed to be either Puerto Rican or Colombian. Now, I know sometimes people tend to pick up others if their destination is on their radar, but I had a strong gut feeling that he had other things in his mind. When I told him I was waiting for a taxi, he kept insisting that I should cancel it and get in his car. He also called me baby a few times, and the red flags kicked in even more. He asked me for my name, and I blurted out a random name that popped in my head at the time. He took his hand out and went to shake hands. I stood up slowly, but something told me not to. That's when I got a small peek into his car. I'm pretty sure there appeared to be some robes and wires in his back seat. There was also a silver light shining from his back seat, what I assumed to be duct tape. I immediately froze and told him that I'd rather not go too close with strangers. He tried to reassure me that he was a good guy and wouldn't hurt me. He started getting frustrated, and for some reason he thought that if he would say nice things like, "But you're so beautiful, baby," at least twice, I'd cool down and get in his car. Nope. This guy seemed to get angry, but as it took place in the city centre and there was quite a few cars and other people around, he just asked me if I was sure for the last time, as if he'd hoped I'd change my mind to his offers. I blew him off for the last time, and that's when he finally left. He didn't even say goodbye or anything, he just drove off like the wind. That's when I realised that he must have been waiting in that spot where I'd first noticed him. I didn't see any cars pass by while I was sitting at the bus stop. It's also the exact spot where most people go after a night out to order a taxi, or perhaps go to McDonald's, whatever floats their boat. The club is located just southeast from the bus stop. A lot of girls were wasted that night, so he most likely wanted to take advantage of that too. When the taxi finally arrived, I texted my best friend. I froze as she texted me that a creepy guy in a large SUV had stopped and mumbled something to her. She ignored him and kept walking. Apparently, he attempted to follow her and kept shouting something, but since she had earphones in, she couldn't really make out what he was saying. When she ran in between the houses, he was gone. Luckily, she got home safely and so did I. The moral of the story is to always be aware of your surroundings and listen to your gut feeling. I'd like to think that it wasn't half as bad as some stories I've read on here, and that we handled the situation well, but something tells me that it would have been different if we were in a more private and secluded area. This happened about a year ago. I was on Grindr looking for some fun dates or new friendships. For those of you unfamiliar with Grindr, it's a social media app designed primarily for gay men, and many people use it to hook up with other men. One day, I was scrolling and received a new message from a guy who we'll call Brian. I took a look at some of his profile pics, read his bio, and decided that I was interested in him. We started messaging back and forth, and he seemed to be really kind, charismatic, and he really knew how to hold a conversation, something that is very hard to come by on the app. A few days went by, and we eventually exchanged numbers. He seemed nice enough, and I wanted to see if he was great in person as he was over text, so I asked him if he wanted to go on a date with me. He very happily agreed. So I scheduled a date with him. The plan was I was going to drive to his place, pick him up, and we'd grab some lattes at our favourite local coffee shop. It was around 6 p.m, and I sent him a text message to tell him that I was leaving my house, to which he responded with a quaint, I can't wait to meet you. I smiled upon his kindness. Then, in the middle of driving to his house, I received a phone call from him, so I picked up, and the conversation went as follows. Me. Hey, Brian, what's up? Brian. Hey, quick change of plans. I'm feeling tired, and I'd rather not go out. Would you be okay with staying at my place? We can watch some shows and order a takeout. Me. I mean, that's not really what I had in mind. I'd like to go out and do things for the first date. Brian. Oh, don't be such a buzzkill. Come over. I won't show you a bad time. As he spoke on the phone, I got a really strange feeling in my gut, like something was wrong about how he talked to me. Before I met him, I imagined his voice and inflection to sound a lot more light-hearted because the way he texted was very whimsical and fun. But over the phone, he talks as if he was in a hurry, perhaps slightly frantic. However, despite my gut feeling, I decided that I'd accept his offer. Maybe he was just tired or stressed from the workday. I pulled into his driveway and he greeted me at his door. He looked like his picture and he was very handsome. He was wearing fashionable glasses and his dark hair, straight hair, contrasted with his light skin. When we go inside, I was greeted by one of his roommates who was playing Dark Souls in the living room. I wanted to be polite, so I approached a roommate and introduced myself. I didn't want to come across as rude to Brian in case this day ended up going really well. While I'm talking with his roommate, Brian calls my name and beckons me to walk inside his bedroom. I politely excuse myself and follow Brian into his room. When I walked inside, I saw something that was straight out of No Sleep. Only this was real and right in front of me. There were candles lit all around, and when I got a closer look, I noticed that there were several altars scattered around the room. Effigies of ancient looking figures, animal bones, jars with unidentifiable liquids inside them, some sort of dagger next to a cat skull, the whole shebang. I don't remember all the altars, but I do remember a couple. One of them was on the floor, and there was a glass container that held some kind of yellow liquid with animal skulls surrounding the container. Another altar was on a shelf next to his bed, and this one had a few candles surrounding some kind of doll with its eyes sewn shut and its hands missing. Now that one was creepy and super bizarre. A part of me was telling me to nope out of there immediately, but I thought that maybe I was overreacting to someone's religious choices. I didn't know much about cult religions, so I didn't want to assume this guy had some kind of malintent. Plus, I can be a little reactive at times, so I decided to stay strong and go along with the ride. When we walked in his room, I wanted to calm my nerves, and because I have a really curious mind, I decided to ask Brian about what these altars were for. He told me that he'd tell me about them later. A weird response, but again, I brushed it off my shoulder, thinking that he might just be a little bit eccentric. I can be a little bit weird too, so I tried to be empathetic and understanding. Then I point to one of the altars and ask about it. He frowns at me and scowls, "Don't touch that." His voice startled me. His intense inflections paired with his angry expression sent a lump in my throat, and I felt threatened. I was almost 4 feet away from the altar, not even close to touching it, and yet he just yelled at me like a father yelling at a kid to stop messing around at church. I was confused, and thinking I'd done something wrong, I apologized. In the blink of an eye, his scowl turned into a smile, and he kindly invited me to sit with him to watch a show. What really weirded me out is the fact that his smile looked so genuine. He had just gotten angry, but all of a sudden, he didn't even care and served me up a really kind deposition. I was unsure of how to process what just happened, so I decided to sit down with him. He seemed to be acting pretty normal once the ordeal had happened, and we started to talk about ourselves. After some time, he became really sweet and soft-spoken, similar to how he was over text, and we were able to share some stories about our lives. It was actually starting to feel like a first date, and my nerves subsided a bit. I was probably just overthinking everything else. Then he turns on his TV. Now, mind you, I was still a little freaked out about his random outburst, so I was on guard. So I offered to invite his roommate to come and hang out with us. Brian's roommate seemed like an old average Joe when I met him, and I just wanted someone else to be there and act as a buffer. I wanted to see how he'd act around other people, but when I gave him my idea, he immediately shut me down, and his personality switched from easygoing to stressed and angry. He started cussing at his roommate to me, making it clear that he absolutely hated him. The switch was so jarring, I started to panic again. Then he changed the subject and started to talk about me again. He said that he found me really attractive, and that in the process, his fingers started to graze my thighs. I needed a second to collect myself, though, so I excused myself to get some water. When I stood up, he immediately slapped my ass and told me not to take long. I walked out, closed the door behind me, and started to make my way for the kitchen. I was hoping to chat with his roommate on the way and ask if I could see him about Brian. but he was asleep on the living room couch, so I just made a beeline for the cabinets in search of a cup. I thought about walking out and driving home because I didn't appreciate his sudden touchiness, but I started getting paranoid. He had all of those orders, and he didn't tell me what they were for. I have seen some horror films from the occult, and I truly had no idea what this guy was capable of. Yeah, he was sweet at times, but he was showing me some really aggressive behaviour. Who's to say that this guy isn't able to put some kind of voodoo curse on me? Dramatic, I know, but you can never really be sure. So I grabbed my water and cautiously head back to his room. When I walked back inside, I saw him sitting on the couch with his legs crisscrossed and his eyes closed. When I approached him, I saw his mouth moving, but I couldn't hear anything coming from it. Weirded out by this, I called the name, but he didn't respond. Strange. I called his name a second time, and his eyes opened, uncrossed his legs, and went back to watching the TV, all without addressing what he was doing. What the hell? I was getting really worried, but I did what I could to keep my cool. I didn't want to do anything to upset him or make him lose his cool. I sat next to him on the couch, and we started talking. Once again, he was completely normal, unnervingly normal. It's like I was in the room with a real-life Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, except Brian was able to switch between them seamlessly. I needed to do something, but what was I supposed to do? I couldn't call him out because he might lash out in some malicious way, but I also didn't want to stay because he was freaking me out. I just stayed. I tried to devise some sort of plan to get out of there without making him angry. At some point, he gets up to grab his phone, and I thought I would try dishing out the same kind of ass grab that he gave me when I went to get the water. Maybe it would release that tension that I was feeling. Maybe he'd like it, and I'd make him less aggressive. Regardless, I wanted to try something. I made my move, and again gave him a grab. Immediately, he turned around, swept my hand away, and lunged at me. He had his hand curled up in a fist, and he flung it towards my face. His fist was inches from making a connection with my right cheek, but I stopped him mid-punch. In that moment, I saw his eyes were wide open, and his facial expression was cold and emotionless. He was right in my face. My heart was beating so fast that I felt like I was seconds away from an aneurysm. He was looking directly at me, and my eyes stared back. At that moment, I felt like the prey to his predator. Then, he uncurled his fists, put his icy hands on both sides of my face, and started to squeeze. "You're just so cute," he said. He pulled me in for a forced kiss. I absolutely didn't want to kiss him, but I was paralyzed and couldn't will myself to push him away. His words were patronizing, sort of like he was talking to a dog, and it felt even more like this because he had just scrunched my face up against his. I felt disgusting kissing someone who had almost punched me in the face, but there was nothing I could do in that moment. Again, I didn't want to risk annoying him. He slowly pulled away, gave me another sweet smile, and sat down, pretending that nothing had happened, just staring at the TV. Yep, I'm completely over this. His behaviour was becoming more erratic and more unpredictable. His room was absolutely creepy. He clearly had associations with the occult, and frankly, he was scaring me. I eventually decided that I'd rather deal with the voodoo-looking orders later on than stay in his house and have to put up with the immediate danger. So I snapped myself out of my anxiety-induced trance, stood up, and told him that I was starting to get sick and that I wanted to go home. He got angry and tried to convince me to stay that night, but I gathered my courage and insisted that it was time for me to leave. He begrudgingly let me, but it was clear that my decision had annoyed him. I didn't care anymore. I said my goodbyes and told him that I'd text him later, thinking, no way, to myself while doing so. I got in my car, drove home shaking and sweating. I felt relieved to get out of there, but nervous that he might try to do something. The uncertainty of it all is what truly shakes me up, but thankfully, no actual harm came my way. Who knows what could have happened if I'd stayed, though. I blocked Brian's number as well and his Grindr profile, and even now, I keep my own Grindr pictures private. I haven't heard from him since, but I still fear that he's going to try and come after me somehow.